Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is Attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
Time now for Stockton Mortgage Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome in on this Martin Luther King Day on Monday in Louisville. A little snow out here on the streets and out on the lawns. But Dan Issel, you're in Denver and you had no snow, right?
No. It's beautiful out here. Sun shining like it usually does. Temperatures aren't too bad. So, yeah, we're having a good time here in Denver.
Well, that's... It's overcast, as you can imagine. The streets are clean, so people are getting around. That's not a lot. Now, I have one of my granddaughters from Charlotte with us to go to the game and all that kind of good stuff. She's 13, and she was supposed to catch a flight out on Sunday, and two flights were canceled. And today, the first flight this morning's been canceled, so she's hoping to get out back home this evening, but you never know, it might be tomorrow. So we have an extended visit with that young lady, and that's all good, man.
Absolutely. Now, I think those flights, if I'm not mistaken, were mostly canceled because of the weather in Charlotte, not Louisville.
Correct. Yeah, they're iced in down there. They got a lot of ice, and I talked to my daughter this morning, and they got some snow, but actually the weather temperature changed on them, and it froze up a lot of things. So they're fighting the ice, and I don't think they'll go to school tomorrow, and I think all the kids will love that one more time, right?
Yep. Always love those snow days.
Yes, we lost a guy, a legend in Kentucky basketball. This weekend, and he's a guy that recruited both you and I, and was very much a part of the program when we were there. Has it gotten much publicity out in Denver?
Just the usual blurbs that you would expect from somebody of Coach Hall's stature passing away. Certainly, I've been on top of what's been written and what's been said in Kentucky. Certainly, nothing to that extent. But you're absolutely right, Mike. I look back on my life, and Coach Hall was so influential in having me come to Kentucky. It just, I've told this story before, I wasn't the first choice. George Jahnke, who wound up going to Dayton, is who they really wanted. But when George decided to go to Dayton, then Coach Hall was relentless. He came to Batavia. In fact, I stay in touch with one of my assistant coaches, and he texted me and said, Coach Hall came to Denver, to Batavia, and stayed about a week. And my favorite recruiting story about Coach Hall is he called one day, and he said it was about, 4:30, 5 o'clock. He said, I'm in town. Can I come by the house? And I said, sure, Coach, come on by. I said, but, at 7 o'clock, I've got a date, so I'll be leaving at 7. So we're sitting at the kitchen table, my mom and dad, me and Coach Hall, and we're talking about Kentucky and everything. And, well, it got to be 7 o'clock, and I thanked him for coming, and I excused myself, and I left. I came home at about 11, maybe 11:30, and Coach Hall was still sitting at the kitchen table with my mother. My dad had gone to bed, but Coach Hall had stayed at our house for 4 hours while I was not there. So thank goodness he was relentless in recruiting me, because it turned out great.
And as I remember it best, there were just a few guys when they came to your house, I grew up in a small house, and we had a combination dining area and then a living room. And Joe B would sit in there and talk. There were very few coaches who would spend that kind of time in your living room, for lack of better terminology. And he would sit there, have some coffee, and just talk and talk and talk. And he was such an amazing recruiter. Then when you got to Kentucky, you found out the guy could coach some too, right?
Exactly.
But I can remember that, and he used to tell. I used to tell me, and everybody told me. Dayton told me that they were going to get Janky, and Joe would say, "Well, I've got these. I'm recruiting Janky and this guy named Issel and some other guy out in Iowa, Bergman or somebody."
Yep, that's exactly right.
And, you know, I didn't know you guys because there wasn't social media like this, but I watched that. And then when Dayton signed Janky, first thing Coach Donaher did was call me. Said, I got the big guy, you know, and we talked. And I didn't know who George Janky was, but then Donaher came out to the house, and he was terrific, too. He's a terrific guy, but when they signed Janky, they thought that they had signed the guy, okay? And for them in the middle, and then Joe kept hammering you. I mean, Joe would come up and would call and just hammer that we're going to get this kid named Issel. And I said, well, you go ahead and get him, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I would say it turned out best for both of us. And, of course, Coach Hall was in charge of the conditioning program. You know, we couldn't start basketball practice until October 15th. And so from the time we got to school the end of August, we had a 6 weeks of just unbelievable conditioning training. And I guarantee you, Mike, on the 15th of October, we were in better shape than any other roster in college basketball.
I would agree. And I think over the course of the season, and I'm going to go back to that running program, but over the course of the season, I think we lost a little of our conditioning edge because Adolf didn't believe in that. He believed in you got your conditioning from your drills and your two-hour workout. And I always felt there were times where we needed a little bit more running.
Do you remember that after Harry Lancaster became the athletic director and Joe moved up a seat to the to Coach Rupp's only assistant coach our senior year, Coach Rupp, you know, he'd say at the end of practice, he'd say, you know, shoot 50 free throws and then take a bath. He always called it a bath, not a shower. And so he'd leave. And Coach Hall started putting us, we'd shoot our 50 free throws, start walking to the locker room. And Coach Rupp said, or Coach Hall said, get on the line.
Yep.
And we'd run lines. So we went in and told Coach Rupp that. And so Coach Rupp wouldn't leave practice early anymore because he didn't like Joe making us run.
We were spoiled, man. I'll tell you what, we were spoiled. And that running program was brutal, but it was very effective in getting you in shape. And I remember, you might remember this, there was a long weekend or something was going on. So Joe said on Thursday, he said, well, if you guys want to take Monday off or something, I don't know, or Friday, whatever it was. He said, "You will run at 6 o'clock in the morning on Friday.
Yep,
we'll meet up here at the track at 6 o'clock." Now it's pitch.
It was dark.
Yeah, pitch black. I mean, it was just dark as can be. So we're running 2:20s, 4:40s, right? And we're running them for time. I guess it was just 2:20s. And we did some sprints. But it was so dark, you couldn't see anybody. All you could hear was go. And you would do your 2:20, walk back across. And you had to do like 8. It was a progressive amount from 2 to 12, right?
It got up to 12. Yeah.
So we were right kind of in the middle. We were about an 8. And somebody came up with the idea that it was so dark that he couldn't see where we were. So we moved up and made it about a 1:40, you know. And we were flying. You remember that? We were flying.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
He couldn't spit. He loved that. He believed in his heart of hearts that running program made a difference. And I can't disagree. I mean, when I coached, we ran, we did conditioning, and we did lines. We did it before practice started. But it was, God almighty, it was different than what you're used to in high school. I mean, they put you in that thing as a freshman on the freshman team. We ran some, and you go like, what have I gotten myself into?
Well, and on this Martin Luther King Day, Mike, I don't think we should skip over the fact that Coach Hall was very instrumental in integrating the basketball program at Kentucky. And we have Goose coming on later in the show, Goose Gibbons. And he has written a book, and it's not out yet. We can ask him when it comes out, but I'm about halfway through it. And Goose will tell you, early in high school, like his sophomore year or his junior year, he never even considered Kentucky. You know, because there weren't that many black players in the whole conference, and so Coach Hall very instrumental in getting some of the first really great African American players to play at UK.
And I was told that that's the reason that Adolph brought him in to try to recruit black players to Kentucky, and he thought Joe was the guy because Joe had had various black players play for him at Regis and then at Southwest Missouri or wherever it was. And Adolph said, look, I think this is the guy to do this. And Joe tried. I can remember Joe bringing, two or three different black players into the locker room after our games. I couldn't tell you their names now, but I do remember that. And yeah. And then, of course, he did bring Tom Payne on. But, a lot of guys, Larry Johnson, right down the line came from Kentucky. Guys, Dwayne Casey, a lot of guys.
After that fiasco of Tom Payne, you know, to be the first African American player at Kentucky, you had to have a guy like Perry Wallace. Perry Wallace at Vanderbilt was the first black player, black basketball player in the SEC, and that was Perry was a man of character and just a great guy. Took unbelievable crap to be the first black player across the whole conference, and you know you needed somebody like that. And Tom Payne, the recruitment of Tom Payne, just turned out to be a nightmare. But I believe was Reggie Walford the second black player
yes.
to come to Kentucky.
Yes, he yeah. was. Reggie was, and then yeah. Dwayne Casey and Larry Johnson all followed. But the cherry on top of the ice cream was Jack Givens and James Lee. Local guys that everybody knew, and there was a – and we'll talk to Jack about it. But what I understand, there was a strong group in Lexington in the African-American community, didn't want either one of them to go to Kentucky. And then there was a strong group that wanted them. And I think that was – those two guys turned the corner – for Joe B and recruiting black basketball players. I think it's Joe never got the credit that he deserved for that particular situation. But, you know, people are talking about it now, and we'll get Goose on to talk about it. Joe was a legend, there's no question. And it's unfair to compare him to anybody else. And here's – I talked to Gene Bartow. Here's why. Gene said, look – to me one time. He's passed now, but we were good friends. And he said, you know what? He said, when I coached UCLA for 2 years, he told me a bunch of stories. He said,
He's the one who took Coach Wooden's place.
That's right.
Right?
Two yeah. years he coached there is all. And then he left and came back to start the program at UAB. But he told me, he said, Mike, that's the most miserable 2 years of my life coaching UCLA. He said, can you believe that? You're miserable. Miserable coaching UCLA. And then he would always say, well, they should have sent Joe B. Hall in there after what he went through at Kentucky. He said they should have sent Joe B. Hall through there. So, I mean,
I I read a quote one time from Coach Hall where he said, you know, they should have hired me at UCLA to take Coach Wooden's place. He said, why ruin two lives?
And in all honesty, let's look at the turnover. The people that tried to follow John Wooden before they really had success. I mean, I guess it was – I mean, they were going to the NCAAs, but, you know, they weren't going to Final Fours or winning it all. I guess Larry Brown was the first one – and I could be wrong. Wasn't Larry the first one to take a non-John Wooden team to the championship?
I think he might have been. Yeah. I think – was it – and it was – remember, it was – I believe it was Tyus Edney. They were in a really close game, and Tyus Edney took the ball the length of the floor and made a layup at the buzzer to send them to the Final Four.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, that's it's people don't understand. They think it's easy, and maybe not easy, but they think it's painless to follow a legend. But it's not. There's a lot of things that a lot of things that have been written is and maybe will be written again about Joe B's battle to follow Adolph. But you know, that's the way the world is. It's going to be interesting to see what happens at Duke and Carolina over the next couple, 2 or 3 years. Yeah. I would imagine both those schools have those guys on short leashes, but it's not the short leash as much as the wins and the losses. Do you win enough to be – you can win and win big, but do you win enough? Do you win enough to follow Kay or to follow Roy? Okay, that's the real question. What is enough to the fan base?
Well, I mean, you use the example of UCLA. Go back to Dean Smith. Matt Doherty lasted, what, 2 years, didn't he, when he took over for Dean?
Yep.
So, you have to give you have to – Coach Hall did the – without a doubt – did the best job of taking over for a legend. You know, Mike, one thing in reading the reports of Coach Hall's passing this weekend, one thing that I did not remember, and I don't know if the media is making too big a deal out of it, I did not remember that that Coach Hall didn't have much support from Coach Rupp when he took over. Now, I know Coach Rupp didn't want to leave, and, you know, he asked me, and I think you did too, were part of, you know, a campaign to overturn the law to get him to stay after his 70th birthday. But I didn't remember that that when that was decided that Coach Rupp didn't give much support to Coach Hall.
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up, because I was thinking about that. When we were playing with the Colonels, you had Louie, yourself, and me. And then during the time of the last year of Adolph reached out, his friends reached out to all of us, three of us, and asked for the support, publicly support. Now, you know, what a trick box that put us into. You and I in particular, Louie wasn't recruited by Joe B., but you and I both were recruited by the man. We played for the other guy, okay, and we had terrific careers and lots of memories with Coach Rupp. So now people want around Coach Rupp, want us to support him against Joe B. I always can remember that. And here's why. Later on, I'm talking to Joe B., and I don't think he ever forgot that. It took him a long time to forget to what we when we came out and supported Coach Rupp. And he told me that one time. He said, you know, I recruited you guys, and then you supported Coach Rupp against me. He said, it took me a long time to get out of that. And you know, he took that personal. But what options did we have? I mean, we couldn't win going either way.
No, you're exactly right. And, I mean, the reason I chose to do it was because I felt a loyalty to Coach Rupp. That didn't mean, as I just said, I'm so thankful that Coach Hall was relentless in his recruiting of me, because it changed my whole life. And so it wasn't that I had anything against Coach Hall, but remember, Mike, we had not only had we played for Coach Rupp, but we had a pretty good relationship with Coach Rupp. We had the Rupp-Issel-Pratt basketball camp. and had gotten to know Coach Rupp after we played for him. And so I just I had to choose that side, but that didn't mean that, you know, we were against Joe Hall taking over.
And that's what I tried to explain him, you know, 10 years after the fact or whatever it was, when I was in college coaching and I went up and I sat down with Dickie Parsons and Joe B and tried to pick their minds about things. And Dickie was unbelievable. Dickie's just was such a basketball coach and such a giver to other people. But we sat there and talked about this. And I realized, to me, it was what you said. That's what it was. Okay? But to Joe, yeah, it was us turning against him. He took it very personal, really hurt him. And he told me. And he said, now, I've worked myself through it. I said, well, Coach, you know, I mean, here's our side. We you know, I can't speak for Dan or Louie, but I said, I know they feel this way, that they had to support Coach Rupp. I mean, it was a no-win situation. And that was sad. But he carried that with him for quite a long time.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about the game in the second half hour, the Tennessee game. Man, was that unbelievable. But what I'd like for you to explain now, Mike, since I wasn't there and a lot of our listeners weren't there, is exactly what they did to honor Coach Hall before the Tennessee game.
That was beautiful. Yes, that was just beautiful. They had a video presentation about Coach Hall, and everybody was just silent in the, you know, the 21,000 was a biggest crowd of the year, legit crowd, and everybody was just silent. And Rick Barnes and his team were out there, and they watched. They were very respectful, to credit Rick Barnes, and his team was very respectful in watching the presentation. And then Calipari did something. You know, he's the master at doing things. You call them promotions or whatever you want to call them.
Yep.
Cause and effect. He came out with a rolled up program like Joe B always carried.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And that was really cool. And then they opened in the 1-3-1 for one sequence in honor of Joe B. And, you know, Cal and Joe B had a great relationship. Once he got to Kentucky, they were very, very close. But those three things set that crowd on fire for this ball game. Before Kentucky started shooting so well, the crowd was still, I mean, they were in total silence and in awe when the video was played. And then went crazy afterwards. And then Cal comes out with a rolled up program. And then they play the 1-3-1, and everybody knew that Joe B upstairs was someplace upstairs and was watching, and you know, he probably had a big smile on his face. So it was terrific. Yeah.
Well, and I think I read where Cal's going to do that, the rolled-up program, not the 1-3-1, but he's going to do the rolled-up program the rest of the season in honor of Coach Hall.
And that's really cool.
And then did I see that they had a spotlight on Coach Hall's jersey?
They did.
Up in the rafters?
They did.
Yeah.
They sure did. That was kind of an aside. The video was phenomenal, kind of going through his career. And we've, as you said, we've got Jack Givens coming on at 11:05, and tomorrow we've got Big Jim Andrews, who not only was recruited by Joe, but he played Joe's first year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got some great stories, one in particular about Joe B recruiting him. But, you know, those guys played for Joe. You and I were recruited by Joe, and then he was an assistant, but these guys played for him, and they've got some great stories and very, very very much have a feel for him and what he did for their career. So looking forward to hearing from both of them. And I don't know the service arrangements. I don't think it's been announced, or if it has, I've missed it. But it ought to be a big deal. It ought to
Absolutely.
Be a big deal. And
Absolutely.
Big Blue Nation. Isn't it amazing that when we look back now, all of a sudden he gets the due that he should have gotten a long time ago? But, you know, as fans, if we're unhappy, We kind of stay unhappy for a while, but ultimately we get out of it when we look back on revisionist history. And, you know, the guy had an unbelievable career.
Yeah. No, he did. And now, refresh my memory. Jim Andrews didn't win a national championship, did he?
No, he was.
That was later. That was a little later when Goose and Lee and Roby and those guys were all they were seniors when they won the NCAA championship.
Big Jim, he was a freshman when we were seniors. So then he played the next year for Coach Rupp before he retired. Then played two for Joe B. And at that point in time, Joe B. not only was the head coach, but he also did a lot of recruiting too, and came up with that team of Greavy and Connor and Flynn and a guy at that team. He recruited them, and then they played for him and got beat in the 75 championship game. So, I mean, Joe, you look back, and Joe really did an amazing job from every angle. And it's hopefully all that will come out here during our honoring him.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Mike, some of the people that have reached out to me since we heard of Coach Hall's passing have referenced they're younger and don't remember Coach Hall from his UK days. What they have referenced to me is the radio show, the Joe B. and Denny show, which he might be as famous to a certain part of our listening group because of the radio show, not because of basketball at UK.
Well, and Denny was so kind, and you could tell Denny was emotional. I saw a video of what he said about Joe B., and his wife started a campaign just a while ago. I can't remember when she asked everybody to send cards or emails for Joe B. to the facility he was in, and that was wonderful from the Crumbs. That was really good. And, you know, he and Denny became friends. And, you know, just goes to show you some of these coaches, when we were in coaching ourselves, you end up not liking somebody for some reason, but ultimately when you get to know them later on, those things all get buried. And that's what happened with Joe B. And Denny.
Absolutely. You always remember the good things. The bad things get blanked from your memory. One of my prized possessions before we go to break, I have to tell you about this, Mike. In a scrapbook that I have at home is a handwritten note to my mom and dad from Coach Hall. And he wrote it after our freshman year. And there was a little bit about basketball in there. Like if Dan keeps working hard, he'll have a good varsity career, something like that. Just a little bit about basketball. But then he basically, and I can't remember the exact phrasing, but he basically said to my mom and dad, you know, you did a pretty good job raising this kid. And that is so important to me that, you know, basketball, that's great. That'll probably be a great part of our legacy. But he would go out of his way to make different people feel good with just a handshake or a note or somebody like that. He was a true Kentucky gentleman, and he did it from the first day I knew him until the last time I saw him.
Great point. And we all have special memories about Coach Hall, and we'll share them all this week, I would imagine. His legacy will be talked about and discussed all week long. So,
but when we come back, Mike, I want to talk about the Tennessee game. That might be about as well as I've seen a Kentucky team play.
Yeah. We'll certainly talk about that because that was impressive, and we can talk college basketball around Jack Givens' visit with us. But coming into the break, let me tell you about our friends at Stockton Mortgage. Life can come at you fast, unanticipated debts, student loans, that credit card you're chipping away at. With home values on the rise in most areas, now may be the time to do a cash-out refinancing on your mortgage. You may have more equity in your home than you think,
with historically low interest rates here for now. Don't miss out on the opportunity to utilize your home's equity to knock out some of those high interest rate debts that weigh you down. Get started with our favorite home loan folks at Stockton Mortgage. Just go to Stockton.com. That's Stockton.com. NMLS 8259. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org. Equal housing lender.
Be a part.
This segment of Stockton Mortgage's Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt is presented by KentuckyTourism.com.
And welcome back on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. When you're ready to explore the outdoors, there's no better place than the Bluegrass State. Hike forest trails, paddle through clear waters, enjoy a horseback ride, or simply soak up the sights and sounds of nature. Looking for more thrills? Hop on a mountain bike, race through rapids, venture deep underground, or zip through the treetops. This is Kentucky. Come see for yourself. Plan your getaway today at KentuckyTourism.com.
And this is Dan Issel, live from Denver. No snow in Denver. Beautiful day. And he's taking care of some grandkids today.
Yep. Scott and Kristen, our son and daughter-in-law, are on a nice little business trip to Cancun for 5 days. And so we've got the three boys, and it's gotten so much easier. You know, Mike, you used to, when you were in charge here, you were scared to death something was going to happen to one of them, so you just kind of followed them around all day long. But they've gotten bigger now. They can play by themselves, and so it's quite a bit easier than it used to be.
I can remember those days. I still have some, but mine are showing the upward trend in age, which, as you said, is a lot easier. But hey, you wanted to talk about this ball game on
Absolutely.
Saturday, Kentucky and Tennessee, and I will have to say I was not expecting the kind of a performance the Cats put on. I have great respect for Rick Barnes, and I thought I've watched their team, and I know that they've been struggling offensively. But early in the year, I saw them beat North Carolina as bad as the Cats did. And go on, and they beat Arizona at home. Arizona's a pretty nice ball club. So I thought this game would be one of those dogfights. And, you know, Calipari's been moaning and groaning about not being tested in a game down to the wire recently. I mean, the Notre Dame game back in December was that way. But, you know, he wanted to, according to him, see his team have to fight to the end on with these ball games. And it was amazing the performance they put on.
It really was. They shot 68% from the field, Mike, as you know, the best a Cal UK team has ever shot. But then when you go back and look at closer at the box score, their four perimeter players, Ty, Wheeler, Minsk, and Grady, the four of them shot 75%. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Of course, what happened was, you know, the Tennessee defense tried to take Oscar away, and they did a little bit. But man, the way Kentucky shot from the perimeter was unbelievable. And it's going to be interesting to see. Texas A&M, is that tomorrow?
Yes, Wednesday.
Wednesday. So you'll leave Tuesday afternoon for that game.
Correct.
I don't know how much of a battle that's going to be. They're going to have a real battle next Saturday when they go to Auburn. But it'll be interesting to see these teams as they start devising defenses to try and take Oscar away. You can't completely take him away, but try to take him away somewhat. It's going to be interesting to see how he responds. To me, that's the difference between a really good player and a great player. A really good player is going to make his contribution and get his numbers when he's not the focus of the defense. a great player will get his numbers and make his contribution, even when the defense is aligned to try and stop him. So Oscar's going to get a lot of attention the rest of this season, no doubt about that.
Well, to your point, Oscar on Saturday afternoon only had 8 shots. He made 4 of 8, but he got 12 rebounds. And of those 12, 3 were at the offensive end. And Tennessee, now, this is a fact maybe a lot of people lost, because I'm going to go to the next Tennessee game, okay, which is going to be an important game in Knoxville. But Tennessee had 10 second-chance points. Kentucky had 6. And Kentucky's leading offensive rebounder was Oscar with 3. Now, you can say, well, they shot, they shot 50-some percent, and there's not for the game, they shot 67 and 61, Trey. So there weren't a lot of rebounds. Well, but there were, and somebody's got to get them. So to your point, Oscar played well without being the focal point of the offense. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely he did. And you can't – I mean, you can't expect to shoot the basketball that way. But, man, I mean, they only missed one free throw. They were 20 of 21 from the free throw line. I mean, they did everything. And Fulkerson, the Kentucky killer that's been at Tennessee for about 15 years now, he didn't score. So they, you know, and their defense, you might think, Mike, when the score is 107 to 79, you might think that, you know, the Cats didn't play much defense, but I thought their defense was pretty good. They turned Tennessee over 20 times in that ball game.
Yeah, and they were able to get 32 points off of those 20 turnovers, and Tennessee only got 11 from Kentucky's 12. What I saw, what I expected to see, and we talked about Oscar, was that he was a guy that they could beat up on the inside. They ran all 3 of their big guys at him at one point in time. And when they did that, Oscar accepted that, and other people got their opportunities. And I thought that was a big deal, because Barnes wanted to take Oscar out, so he limited Oscar's touches. Oscar was fine with that, and everybody around him shot the ball. Now, how does that reflect going forward? Here's my thought. When you go back to Knoxville, you're going to be in a dogfight. They're going to adjust some things, and it'll be a heck of a game. But going forward, how do teams take how Tennessee played Kentucky and alter it as far as the outside shooting? Boy, I mean, a Wheeler, a guy who struggles to make baskets, okay? He's 8 of 10. He got into the paint, was able to put the ball up on the glass quite a few times. And, I mean, when a guy shoots 8 of 10 and gets 21 points, you got to think, well, maybe I've given Oscar a little bit too much attention, right?
All of them.
Yeah.
And I think when Wheeler hit that 3-point shot, I told Sherry, I said, well, this is going to be unbelievable. Everybody's making shots. But I love how consistent and how efficient they were. You mentioned that Wheeler only took 10 shots and had 21. Ty, I think, only took 12 shots, right?
Yep.
And had what did he have, 28?
He was 10 of 13, 2 of 4 beyond
13,
the arc.
Okay.
And 28.
Right.
Yes, 28.
Yeah. See, to me, that's how, when I read a box score, that's what I look at. If a guy's shooting, scoring 20 points, but taking, you know, 20 shots to do it, he's not making a huge contribution. You take 13 shots and score 28 points, now you're really helping your team out.
Yeah, and you talk about efficiency, okay? Beyond the arc, Kentucky took 18, made 11, and Calipari feels very comfortable with his team's taking, you know, 18 to 22 shots, maybe 23 from beyond the arc. You talk about efficiency. But if you look at this stat sheet, yes, listen to this. You're coaching Tennessee, and your team shoots for the game 53%.
I know.
47% beyond the arc. And they shoot. Now, they didn't do well at the charity stripe, only 6 of 11. You got to look at that and say, man, You know, and forget about the rebounds because both teams shot the ball so well. There weren't that many rebounds. They got 10 offensive rebounds also. I mean, the turnovers hurt them, okay? But they had 17 assists on 31 made baskets. That's pretty good. So you're coaching Tennessee, Dan. What you look at this stat sheet and what do you say? I mean, you know, I mean, it was an amazing performance by Kentucky, but a pretty daggone good one by Tennessee.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you look at Tennessee's stats under normal circumstances, you'd be pretty well pleased with that. But then you look at the other side and you see how well Kentucky shot the basketball. That's just amazing.
Well, talk about off the bench. Now, Toppin goes in. He gets 15 minutes. He's 2 of 3. And he has one rebound. He needs to get more rebounds than one, okay, with his athleticism. He can do better than that. But, again, there was a ton of made shots on both sides. And then Davion Mintz plays 20 minutes. He's 4 of 5. He's 2 of 3 beyond the arc. And he had 2 assists. He had no turnovers, none. Yep. So, I mean, you talk about your bench. Bench was solid.
Well, and if you – I believe, and I don't have the box score in front of me, but I believe that Brooks and Toppin together, didn't they score about 15 points combined?
Yeah, Toppin had 7 in who? Toppin and who?
Brooks.
Yeah, Keon played well. He got 9. So they had 16 points. Keon didn't take many shots. He had 3 of 6 and hit a tray. So, I mean, they were very efficient and very good at shot selection.
Yeah. No, that's the point I was getting ready to make. If between Toppin and Brooks, you can get 16 points out of that position, and Minsk is starting to shoot like the Davion we know, then, yeah, Kentucky's going to be hard to beat. Now, this, I don't know, have you started doing any prep on Texas A&M? How good are they, Mike?
I've looked at them. They're 3-0, I think, in the league play. I'll have to get my stats out here for the league. Yeah, they're at the top. They're 3-0 going into Saturday's game, and I think they won that, so they're 4-0. But the key to them, I think, is at home, they're 10-0. They really like to play at home. And they're on a 7-game win streak as of through Saturday. And Saturday night they played Arkansas. I think they beat Arkansas, but whether they did or didn't, it was at Arkansas. And, you know, it's going to be a challenge. More than anything now, after playing so well, okay, against Tennessee, after playing so well, you got this game on the road, and you think the name Texas A&M. Okay, I understand that. But I have Auburn on Saturday. So between Tennessee and Auburn, you have Texas A&M. Psychologically, I'm concerned with how they approach this game on the road.
Great point. Great point, because when the new polls come out, I believe it'll be this afternoon, I fully expect Auburn to be the number 2 team in the country. I watched a little bit of their game, and now I can't remember. I think it was Ole Miss. But Auburn's really good, and when we play Auburn, I don't know who we're going to match up with Jabari Smith. I think he gives Kentucky a real matchup problem. But that's a great point. You might be so concerned about playing Auburn on Saturday that you look right past Texas A&M.
Yeah, it's only natural that you look at a team that's ranked, like you said, number 2 or 3, whatever, 1, and you go, man, I can't wait to play them. And your thought process is, I can't wait to play them. I'm thinking about it. I look at who's playing. They're showing me tapes of Texas A&M trying to get me ready, but all I can think about is playing the number 2 team in the country. And it's going to be a challenge on Wednesday night, whether you think Texas A&M is any good or not. They've got some nice wins, but it's a game they're going to be looking forward to as a team, Texas A&M. They're looking and they're saying, well, maybe with our record, we can come in as an at-large team. And particularly, Kentucky right now is a quad 1 win for anybody. okay?
Yeah, no, and you know, I mean, it's been this way for 100 years. You know, when Kentucky shows up, Texas A&M will be on fire, their crowd and everything. That's and you said that the Tennessee game was a sellout.
Yep.
And the crowd was terrific.
Yep. I have not seen the numbers, but I looked to the end zone upper level, and that was full. There were some spotty seats. A lot of orange got in. I'm telling you, there was a lot of orange. And when we go down, the Blue Mist will be in Knoxville, too. But there was a lot of support for the orange on Saturday. But, yeah, the upper level end zones were full. So I got to think.
See, that just proves you play a good opponent, and the fans are going to show up. They're not going to show up for the Magnificent Seven, but they'll show up for that. That's for sure.
Well, that's for sure. Tennessee now, they've got a rematch with Kentucky later on in Knoxville, and that'll be interesting what Rick Barnes does, changes his approach to playing Kentucky. And I think, let's be honest, Kentucky can't shoot like that every game.
No. Okay. No, they won't shoot. That was the best they shot in 13 years of Cal being here. I've got to believe that is probably a top 5 or top 10 shooting performance for Kentucky all time. So, no, you can't expect that. But I think the way that it came about, the shots that Kentucky got, their unselfishness. You know, I've talked about Jay Billis, and Jay Billis was doing the game on Saturday. And, you know, he always makes a point of talking about how unselfish Kentucky is. And I think that is a result of them having veteran players as opposed to a bunch of freshmen on the team, the way they play together.
Yeah, that, you're exactly right. But you say that, and how many guys are willing to spend 2 or 3 years? And this is just the attitude of these young folks. They want to get to the NBA. They all think they're going to get to the NBA, okay? But look, Hopkins and Collins aren't ready for the NBA. And if they entertain any of those thoughts, I mean, they're crazy. So they stick around for the second and the third year. Now you got veterans on top of a big recruiting class. Maybe you go to the portal. Oscar leaves. You need a big man. You go to the portal if you can find him. You get a big man that fits and maybe brings that attitude that you need. But I think it's ultra important. Well, one, Wheeler and Hopkins and Collins got to make a statement and come back next year. And with the combination of the young guys and maybe a transfer portal guy, you get what you're talking about. You get that experience, that leadership.
Yeah. I'm holding out hope that Oscar will come back. If he's not going to get drafted, and right now, what did we say? He's like rated number 85th or something like that.
Yeah.
If he's not going to get drafted, he ought to come back too. But what other games this weekend did you see that impressed you?
Well, a texter helped me out here. It helped you out. A&M beat Mizzou by 3 on the road Saturday. And I thought they were playing Arkansas. They'd already beaten Arkansas once.
So, yeah.
And Mizzou's a team that at Mizzou beat Alabama. I can't figure that out, yes, because when we played Mizzou, they were awful.
Well, Alabama and Alabama either played a close game or got beat again over the weekend. And, I mean, Alabama's easy to figure out. Because all they're going to do is shoot three-pointers. So if they're shooting halfway decent, they're going to be in the game. If they're not, then, you know, anybody can beat them. And so I have taken Alabama out of the top tier of my SEC teams.
Really? Have you?
Yep.
Nope. Oh, my goodness.
I don't like them at all.
I kind of like some of the things they do. And, boy, if they get hot, they're like Kentucky playing right now. I mean, I
understand that. But if they're not hot, then, you know, anybody can beat them because they keep shooting them, Mike, whether they're hot or not.
Well, the one thing they do have, they've got a couple young guys that I think could become good rim protectors, and at times they have been good rim protectors. And if they've got that back there, then they can chuck a duck from the outside with the best of them. It'll be interesting. That'll be a crazy crowd in Tuscaloosa when Cats get there. It always is. And you talk about basketball in the weekend, okay? How about Northwestern beating Michigan State? Yeah. Your boys, Northwestern.
And that was at Michigan State, too. So, we keep saying it over and over again, but this tournament is going to be some kind of fun.
It really is. And the fun's going to start in the SEC tournament. I mean, you know, that's going to start all the fun.
Yep. No question about it.
What about the situation here? And I don't know if you listen to Perrin Johnson and Diener, or you don't get any effect out there about U of L. But man, they're going nuts here about U of L. They are going nuts.
Well, you know, if I say anything negative about U of L, I get dumped in with Blankenbaker as a hater. But I hear all of this debate. Do we have the pieces? Do the pieces not fit? How come, you know, that Chris is such a bad coach? But Mike, when I watch this team play, they've got no talent. They can't score the basketball. They go every game. They go extended periods of time without scoring. And the game against Pittsburgh was exactly like that, with 7 minutes and 37 seconds to go in the first half. Louisville was ahead 22-17. The rest of the half, they went 1-for-11. And at halftime, they had given up that 5-point lead, and they were behind by 4, 28-24. They scored 2 points in the last 7 minutes and 37 seconds. You can't do that and win games. So I just don't think – I mean, you know, you can say, well, it's Chris's fault that they don't have the talent. I go back to what I've said all along. He's not going to be able to recruit top kids as long as this cloud is hanging over their head. And what happened to Curry? Curry, who was going to be the savior, didn't play last game. What happened to him?
I don't know. I haven't heard. Process, have you heard?
Yeah, he got injured. He injured his leg, I believe, and he just said, and it came back, I mean, less significant than they already expected. I mean, I have Chris Mack talking about it if you'd like me to play it.
Yeah, let's.
Yeah, sure. Because, you know, he was going to be the savior for this team after his big game. The game before.
He got hurt on Thursday's practice, which was unfortunate because as well as he played Wednesday night, he was playing equally as well on Thursday in practice, and then, you know, goes down with what I thought at the time was going to be a severe ankle sprain. He was howling in pain, and, you know, he said, "Coach, I'm going to be good." And I don't think he meant for the game today. Fortunately, the imaging was good. And it's just a matter of the swelling and the pain tolerance, the swelling going down and how much pain he can tolerate. And he's a tough kid. And he was in shoot around today trying to get going. But I feel like we made the right decision to hold him off for a couple of days because I don't want that thing to linger as we go into more games.
Well, you like the thing about tough kid, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. That is unfortunate, and you know maybe that could have made a difference in the Pittsburgh game. They got beat by 12, but I hate to single out one player, but wasn't Cross supposed to be a really good player that was coming in here, transferring in here?
Well, he's supposed to be a shooter. That was his game, a shooter and maybe a rebounder at times. He does a nice job of rebounding, but he struggled with his shot. And Locke, who's a streaky shooter, I've saw him numerous games at Florida, and he can get hot now. He can run five or six trays in a row, either in transition or the half court. But he never showed the ability to beat anybody off the bounce. Okay, he's a catch-shoot guy who struggled with a shot. I mean, when it rains, it pours. If you can't score, yeah. I mean, if you can't shoot, you can't score, right?
Yeah. The reason I brought up Cross was that his line really stuck out in that Pittsburgh game. He played 9 minutes, missed a shot, had one rebound, one turnover, and three fouls in 9 minutes.
To your point, Dan, you read that line. A guy that's 6'7", if he's a shooter and he's not shooting, go do something else. Rebound, play defense. Assuming you're capable of those two things, you have to make the effort, right?
Yeah. I just think it's totally unfair, and I haven't heard a word. Like you said, they're going nuts in Louisville, and I'm assuming that most of it falls at the feet of Chris Mack.
And really? You think so?
and like I said last week, Chris Mack didn't get any dumber driving from Cincinnati to Louisville. He doesn't have any players.
Yeah, that's a sad commentary, but I think it's a result of all this NCAA issues that are still lingering.
Sure it is.
And also, I want to say this. It's different recruiting at Xavier than it is recruiting at Louisville. You need to up your game from Xavier quality players. And look, he had some good teams. Guys developed. They blossomed at Xavier. He did a nice job there. And as you said, he didn't lose that ability on the drive down 71. But I also think that you've got to recruit a different kid. You've got to recruit against the Kansas, the Kentuckys, the North Carolina. You have to land a couple of those guys. And it's hard to land those guys if you don't have roots in that arena or you have a NCAA violation hanging over your head. So I don't know. Recruiting is the lifeblood of a program.
Yep. Well, it's going to be a long year for U of L fans, I know that.
And I have empathy for them because, and you do too, we went through that last year.
Sure.
It's ugly, man. It's ugly when the pieces don't fit. So, Well, next half hour, we're going to have Jack Givens join us and talk a little Joe B. Hall. But in the meantime, this segment has been brought to you by KentuckyTourism.com. When you're ready to explore the outdoors, there's no better place than home. Hike, bike, paddle, fish, or even venture deep underground. This is Kentucky. Come see for yourself. Plan your getaway today, KentuckyTourism.com.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
CardNation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.